Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
This is Tim Staples of Catholic Answers. I'm excited to let you know that I also teach high school apologetics for homeschoolconnections.com, an online Catholic curriculum provider. There are also recorded independent learning courses at homeschoolconnections.com. Whether you take apologetics with me, literature with Joseph Pierce, or philosophy with Bill Donahue, or any of the other 400-plus courses with homeschoolconnections.com, it's a great way to get Catholic learning for your family.
This episode is brought to you by Hallo, the number one Catholic app. Hallo has 1,000 audio-guided prayers and meditations for you to deepen your relationship with God. To listen to all of the Hallo meditations for free for 30 days, head to hallo.com/breadbox.
How bad was the medieval Inquisition? Chris Check is next. Hello and welcome to Focus, the Catholic Answers podcast for living, understanding, and defending your Catholic faith. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and the medieval Inquisition is the one that started it all. And before we talk about the Spanish Inquisition, the Roman Inquisition, or anything else that's called an Inquisition in the history of the Catholic Church, we thought it best to go back to the beginning. What was the first Inquisition like? Who were the people who were involved? And how did all of that turn out? So Chris Check, our president, the president here of Catholic Answers, and a historian in his own right, is here to dig in with us. Who were the Albigensians, the Cathars, and what was all of this medieval Inquisition about? And how did it give birth to something that continues even to this day, the Catholic kind of practice of Inquisitions? Here's Chris Check. Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers, thank you for returning to do another conversation about the Inquisitions.
Cy, thank you for having me back. People are going to start to, you know, have doubts about your judgment.
Oh, that, well, I think those doubts are...
they're already extant.
They're widespread on the internet. Let me reset a little bit so that the person who either didn't hear the first episode or does not fully recall it, I'll do like the... on our last episode, where we left things was in the... period often called the medieval period or the Middle Ages, which you refer to as the Christian Age, which I refer to as Christendom, because it's an age that is entirely the mindset is permeated by Christ and a hierarchical view of creation that comes from the Jewish and Christian idea of God made it, and then God has his angels and his people, and among people he's got... there are hierarchies, and you fit in there.
And in addition to that, Cy, the secular order is bound up in this reality. So this thing that you call Christendom, which was a real thing, was Christian, and it was Hellenic in thought, and it was Roman in its political order, and those things are united. But the secular world, as we talked about, and the church and state, to use the modern language, were separate in the sense of their functions, but not in principles.
There we go. Okay. Yeah. And so it's in this society that the Inquisition develops. It's a development of a mindset in which the salvation of souls is what everything is for.
Because heresy is a threat to the common good, to the individual soul and his salvation, but to the communio, to the common good as well.
Yeah. And so along come these, we talked then about the Albigensians, okay, you got to help me with my centuries. 13th century?
Yeah, 12, starting in the 12th.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Albigensians come, and they're very odd people. And
yeah, or the Cathars.
The Cathars.
Right. And I should clarify, because I said pure doctrine, that it really, the way it should be described is Catharos, the Greek, meaning pure. So this was the state of life toward which they believed that they were proceeding once they had thrown off the wickednesses of the material world. So they had this, the two gods of the spiritual world and the material world, and the one was good and the other was not. And then, of course, this led to all kinds of, not just heresies, but violent political manifestations, vandalism of churches, obscene rites, infanticide, yeah, et cetera.
Right. And so the, you know, we don't take the history can be told without the pretense that everyone that does everything in history is morally equal. They're not. And here we have a society that is trying to live a Christian faith, and into it comes this nasty, really awful body of thought, which is rooted in profound untruths.
It is, and it manifests itself in violently. And then the reaction to it, and I think this is something very important to underscore about the Inquisition, the medieval Inquisition, and the Inquisition in Spain. The reaction to the bad behavior of the Cathars first comes from the faithful in a form of what we would today call vigilante justice or mob justice. So by the time the church looks at the problem, or at the moment the church is looking at the problem, she is saying, yes, on the one hand, we want to find out who the heretics are and who are not so that we can bring them back so they may be saved as well. And so the errors that they're sharing or preaching don't infect others. But also, we want to protect the innocent from the behavior of the Catholic mob, because it's from this age, and whether it was actually said or not is a doubtful question. But, you know, kill them all, God will know his own, allegedly one of the princes of Languedoc said.
I've actually heard Marines say that.
Right, well, yeah, it's actually not a good thing to say.
No, it's not. But,
right. So, but I mean, it's been attributed to the Pope even, or something. Of course, the Pope didn't say that. But nonetheless, there was very much a mob justice or a vigilante justice against the Cathars. So the church says, sure, we want to know who the heretics are, but we want to know who the heretics are not and protect them from the excesses, the wicked excesses of the mob. Does that make sense? So,
yes.
So we're trying to protect the innocent as well as identify who the guilty are. And this is one more thing. I'm sorry to go on. And then This is how the Inquisition develops organically. And then I use that word organically to make the point also, the church didn't say, okay, you know what, look at this, we need an Inquisition. And then now we establish this permanent institution, this permanent body.
Oh, I see.
It develops organically, and enemies of sympathetic as well as hostile historians will both acknowledge that the church, when she begins this process that we today call the medieval Inquisition, she was not thinking of establishing a permanent institution. She was addressing a particular crisis the history and in a particular location in the church. Is that helpful?
It is. If I could take a contemporary thing, after the apartheid period in South Africa, you get these truth commissions, which have among many people have a good reputation, although I'm sure it's a mixed bag. Everything human is. But what I'm getting at is we have to address a particular moment in history in a way that doesn't just kill all the, you know, white people, or doesn't just brush this all under the rug. We need a tool here. So the maybe the comparison is not apt, but I always try to find, especially with the Inquisition and the Crusades and stuff, secular examples of similar undertakings, so that secular people will not see this as completely foreign, but as this is what has to happen sometimes. You have a truth commission, you have a 9/11 commission, you have things that we, how are we going to know who's the terrorists among us and who's not the terrorists among us?
Right. There have been, to use an analogy that we talked about in the first event or in the first episode of this podcast, there have been people cheating in Major League Baseball, so now we're going to have congressional hearings.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
I happen to think Congress should have nothing to do with Major League Baseball, but nonetheless. But it is this kind of thing. And then the very important point to underscore here, Cy, is that this happened at a particular moment in history, and these were the events and the understandings of people in the way that they understood the world that led to this. It didn't happen in a vacuum, and that's in a cultural vacuum, in a historical or even geographic vacuum. And that is why it is so dangerous and erroneous, almost always erroneous, to try to interpret events in history through the lens of the dominant ideologies of, you know, 2021.
Okay, so how did the medieval Inquisition then operate? What was it?
Well, the church was fortunate because in 1216 there was founded this order called the Dominicans, founded by we call them Dominicans. And or OP, right? Order preachers.
But
right?
Dominic, the founder.
Sure. And these men were, and in fact still are, I mean, in the main of the orders, the large orders operating the church today, still quite sound defenders of doctrine and good theologians. That Dominican school in Washington, D.C., yeah. Right? That's probably the best theology school in the country. So
Catholic Answer School of Apologetics is pretty good.
It's true. We do draw some distinctions between apologetics and
that's
theology.
That's for Donna, our marketing director. Donna, I mentioned the School of Apologetics. There
very
you go.
Good. I'm sure she's going to be grateful to you. So the church had, if you will, at the ready men, religious, who were formed for this. And again, even historians who are generally hostile to the Inquisition, the medieval Inquisition, like Charles Lea, for example, who wrote the first big history of the thing, they say it's a fact. The Dominicans were uniquely qualified for this work because of their theological training, but also because they were exceptional men, Cy.
Yeah.
They were men of exceptional virtue who were sufficiently detached from the immediate argument or the personalities involved, and they could, because of the quality of their virtue, they made good judges. Even, like I say, Charles Lea is a good example, but other historians who are hostile to the Inquisition acknowledge this about the Dominicans. They were very good at what they did because of the quality of their formation.
Well, if I could ask you a practical question, who sets up an Inquisition? Is it the diocesan bishop of the local place, or is it the Pope sets up an Inquisition? So you said that the Albigensians, the Cathars, are southern France, northern Italy kind of phenomenon. Is it the local diocese? Is there?
Yes. So the bishop is going to say, I believe that I've got a hotbed of heresy, or heresy is manifesting itself in this way in my diocese. He may write to Rome. He may write to the Dominican Order and say, "Can we get a team of inquisitors in here?" And then in fact they would come in and they would declare what they called a period of grace.
This I love.
A term of grace.
Yes.
A term of grace. And in fact, I have not found proof of this. But I suspect that our present day expression, grace period,
comes from this.
So during this term of grace, and I'm going to just kind of go super quick here, people are permitted to come forward and say, you know what, I have been spreading these heresies.
Yeah.
And if they do make this admission, then they are given if they make it privately, they're given some kind of a private penance. But if they have been publicly preaching heresy, then they are given a public penance. And why? This stands to reason, because they need to let the world know that they've been corrected and that they no longer are advocating these heresies.
So, this is something that I suppose as a Christian, we want to say that there are profoundly Christian elements to this that we don't want to disown. Among them, just fess up and we'll all get beyond this, that there's this is very much in the tradition of forgiveness of the church. And it's not to say this is okay, but it is to say we're not here to kill anybody. We're not here to torture anybody.
Yeah, neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more, as our Lord puts it.
Yeah, okay. So now
the problem becomes,
I don't take advantage of the of the term
that's
of
right.
grace.
Yeah. So to go back to our first episode, now you are a threat to the common good because you are threatening the salvation of the people around you.
Uh-huh.
So now they have to be examined. And the principles that or the methods, I should say, that the inquisitors use go back to Roman law. The age of Augustus in particular, probably. So the early part of the Roman Empire. And as the Inquisition develops over time, these methods become increasingly refined and improved. They base themselves on scriptural warrants. For example, in the Old and the New Testament, both Moses and St. Paul say, you need multiple witnesses. No one is going to be condemned on the testimony of one witness. So multiple witnesses are required. And other methods of inquiry that come from Roman law are applied. And over time, manuals are developed. Bernard Guy writes one of the big ones, and he...
Yeah, that's me. I'm going to stop dinging. Sorry.
It's my response. Yeah. So, yeah, in Bernard Guy's manual, he says if the inquisitor's cell phone continues to go off,
then right. Sure. Where's the thumb screw?
Yes, that's right. Exactly. Yeah. So manuals are developed, and as inquisitions take place, inquiry, really, it's the same root. As these cross-examinations, as these inquiries take place, then the Dominicans writing these manuals say, watch for this. This is the way the heretic is going to try to obfuscate. He's going to answer a question with a question. He's not going to give you a direct answer. Be on the lookout for this kind of thing. So the manuals become more sophisticated over time. And eventually what you get, Sai, is far from being this sort of cruel institution, you get the most sophisticated court of the period, including all the secular courts, because of the care that these Dominicans put and thought that these really first-rate minds and good souls put into the work.
Let me ask you a straight up question then. Do you think Jesus would want us to torture other people?
I don't.
Okay.
And in fact, so in my course, I take up the question of torture at length. And
okay.
So it's another reason to buy the course, Donna.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Catholic Answers School of Apologetics, available now at shop.catholic.com.
Yeah, or schoolofapologetics.com. Right. So I take up the question of torture. But one thing that we can say for sure, actually, there are a number of things we can say. We can say that for the first 30 years of the medieval Inquisition, we don't see torture at all. There are even early inquisitors, a colleague of Guy's, Nicholas Emmerich, he's of the opinion and says so. Confessions received under torture are of dubious merit. We see this much later, by the way, in the trial of the Templars and the suppression of the Templars. These men were brutally tortured, right, and they confessed all kinds of things, including one of them. So this is in 14th century, but confessed to killing God, for example, which
the guy had not done. That's impressive.
So,
and that was all just so the French crown could take all their money. Right?
Hey, Philip the Fair, I think so. I think it was not a good event. I talk about that in my Crusades course, which is in production now. But torture was used in some rare circumstances. In time, even the methods associated with this become quite refined. It required the permission of the local ordinary.
Yeah.
A doctor had to be present, no threat to life or limb. It couldn't be applied for more than a 15-minute period, things of this nature. If a confession was received under torture, then 24 hours later, you would have to get the confession repeated. So things of this nature. So it isn't to say that the church, I think, in her thinking has developed. But by the way, torture was common. It was in the secular courts. Yeah. It came from Roman practices. It was completely common. In fact, it was used less likely in the ecclesial courts of the Inquisition. And there are examples of men who were accused of some kind of secular crime committing one form of blasphemy or another so that they could get their cases transferred to the ecclesial courts,
yep,
which had a reputation for mercy.
But it, it's also the case that the as they tried to make the tortures not a threat to life and limb and tried to make them, I mean, to this degree, you could use this word, safe, so to speak, and less gruesome, they ended up with basically what you would call waterboarding.
Well, I mean, we still use torture. In fact, I talk about this, Cy, and you know, we tend to think of ourselves, waterboarding is not torture. Some people say, of course it's torture. Of course.
Well, if you do it to me, it's torture. I don't know what it is if they do it to you, but if you do it to me, it's torture.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and we're getting far afield here, but the church has been explicit now in her opinion with respect to torture.
Yeah.
But these things, you know, they develop over time, and this was a common practice. And,
right.
And with respect to torture, if the Inquisition should be remembered for anything in this regard, it should be that it was applied with much better judgment and far less frequently than in the secular courts.
So let me ask you about this then. Was this medieval Inquisition... was it successful? Did it do what it set out to do, which was essentially to root out this false religion so that the kind of coherence of society built on the truth about Christ, that project could continue? Was it successful?
Let me go back to the torture thing, because I want to give this quote from the Catechism. Currently,
okay,
torture which uses physical or moral violence to extract confessions, punish the guilty, frighten opponents, or satisfy hatred is contrary to respect for the person and for human dignity. So this is, the church has repudiated this practice now. But to get to your and I would refer people to that paragraph 2297 in the Catechism. To get to your question, however, it was very successful. It was very successful in rooting out heresy and in restoring peace to southern France and the places of northern Italy, where this heresy was, what's the word I'm looking for here?
I don't know. Where it bloomed?
Yeah. Well, that's the problem. So I was trying to think. You don't really want to say heresy bloomed here.
No, because
there was this conflagration of heresy. It was very successful. And the Keller says the Dominicans, we were talking about in the previous episode, as the Dominicans like to joke, right? Well, when was the last time you saw an Albigensian?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So no, it was quite successful. And it was so successful in its methods that when it was needed again in Spain, the methods were, and the Dominicans were called up again.
So give us if you could, Chris, a kind of a judgment on the medieval Inquisitions. How would a Catholic today come to settle this issue in one's mind about what was this and how should I be thinking of it as someone who is across time, Dominicans are our spiritual fathers, are our brothers in the faith. This is not something that we're separated from. We are in a communion with these. How should we think about this as a mark on this everlasting communion called the Catholic Church?
Well, some of them are saints. I think of Peter Martyr, Peter Verona, who had a cleaver put through his head by a Cathar. So they are part of that patrimony of the Church, certainly. I think the best way for a Catholic to think about this is the thread that I have through the whole course and that we've been talking about in each of these episodes. There was a period in history when Christians understood that they were on their way to union with God or not. And this was the most important thing in their lives, far and above. And that things that stood in the way of it were actually more important. Losing your soul was far worse than losing your life. And it was in light of this belief that these practices and the medieval Inquisition came to be. And so I don't think it's something that Catholics need to apologize for. We can point and say, these methods of torture probably didn't contribute, or if they did, not as much as we might think. Or we can say this man was gleeful in torturing, although I don't really think that there are necessary examples of that. And but if we could find, we could say, okay, well, that isn't Christian behavior. But the institution in the main, it was a good thing.
And how is the church different after this medieval period of Inquisition than before? Are there new offices? Are there new now? Is it a permanent thing? Like you said, it didn't start out as a permanent thing, but by this period, in the late 13th century, we're talking about the Cathars are mostly.
Yeah, or mid late 12th, but it is in the 13th century that most of the medieval Inquisition is going on. Though,
but it's over.
When is Joan of Arc tried? That's in the 15th century.
Yeah. So then the Waldensians.
Yeah. So these are examples. In fact, I think of Joan of Arc as an example when the. By that point, extremely careful methods of the Inquisition were established and set down. When these are abused, as they were in the case of Joan of Arc,
she was
denied things, recourse to Rome, for example, counsel.
So, is this one of the kind of the legacies of the medieval Inquisition is a highly developed clerical court system in which you're supposed to get certain rights. Joan didn't get them.
No, she did not. But after her death and her rehabilitation, she did. So that's an example when the methods of the Inquisition and the courts were not properly followed, then there would be a miscarriage of justice. But when they were, as in the case of her rehabilitation, now by that point, Joan was dead. But we know she was with our Lord in heaven. But nonetheless, when they were in her rehabilitation, then justice was delivered. So I would say the legacy is certainly obvious in the church because, and we'll talk in the next section about this, it comes up again in Spain. And then by that point, the Roman Inquisition is established later during that period and becomes the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, as we were talking about. But I also think that some of the methods of the careful methods of the Inquisition developed in the Middle Ages find expression now in secular courts in Western republics.
However, the propaganda value you is enormous for those who are opponents of the church. You just have to say the word Inquisition or make some. That brings me to a question I didn't want to. But first of all, say something about the propaganda value of the.
It's very, very difficult to overcome. I think Christians need to accept that to a degree. Catholics need to accept that to a degree. It is very, very difficult to overcome unless your interlocutor or whomever it is you're having the conversation is willing to sit down with you and go over the origins and the facts to be sure, but why this happened at this time in history and how men understood the world. But if we're going to just try to interpret it through our own dominant ideologies of today, it's a losing conversation.
Well,
I don't mean to throw in the towel on it. I just want to spare Catholics the frustration of banging your head against the wall if you're going to try to have a conversation with the Inquisition about somebody who really isn't interested in knowing the story.
No, and just wants to mark you with that brand.
Right.
But there are certain things.
I think it's probably poor form to wear that. You know, that apron that you see when you're grilling. I'd rather be roasting heretics or something like that. I'm not in favor of that. There was a Catholic magazine that hawked those.
Yeah.
That doesn't help the case.
No. And we're not talking about Albigensians. We're talking about Protestants. It's a joke. It's a little joke.
People were put to death. And by the way, and they were burned. But again, this was a common. This was a common means of execution in this period.
Right.
Right. We still, by the way, put people to death.
We do
for capital crimes.
We put people in horrible unspeakable situations for the rest of their life.
Yes.
I mean, we don't even want to. If it's a question of who's better by the evidence of how our societies run, we just remember what's going on in prisons all around the world today.
Or we execute innocent babies in the womb. We are not an age to judge other ages, for goodness' sakes.
No, it's amazing that we do. But there is one thing that I think that is a real black mark on the Catholic Church and on the medieval people, and that is the Iron Maiden, the invention of this. What? Why are you laughing at me?
Well,
to put people inside of a box with knives that would go into them. It's horrific to think about.
I know. We should get one here at Catholic Answers as kind of like a staff discipline.
So tell me the truth about the Iron Maiden.
It's an utter fabrication.
It didn't exist.
No. And I'm not even sure the technology. I mean, to hear this thing described, and by the way, even in the description of it, you are there are several versions. So we don't even see this expression Iron Maiden until sometime in the 1800s, right?
Well, a lot of these were invented for 1800s museums, these medieval torture. And this is the truth. I mean, I'm not trying to hide anything. They would have medieval torture instruments.
Which turned out not to have existed
in the
Middle
Ages. But they just
invented
them. They just put them out there in their wax museum or whatever P.T. Barnum was doing.
Right, right. But even if, I mean, honestly, if a smart person thinks about this for a moment, there are a couple versions of this. One is where you would be allured by this beautiful statue. And of course, not know it was a statue. Okay, come on. So anyway, and then when you embraced it, then the trap would spring, and then you would be filled with knives. It's like the people of the Middle Ages either were extremely smart to design this
device.
Man, could
they make good statues.
And by the way, extremely dumb to fall for it. So it just doesn't bear any scrutiny. But yeah, most of these things are fabrications of the imaginations of British writers who hate the Spanish or hate the Catholic Church.
Yeah. Right. Or people who just want to have a good museum, like sell tickets to a museum.
Yeah. Yeah. But we could put one in the lobby.
All right.
At Catholic Answers.
I'm willing. As long as it's not used on me. Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers. Thank you.
Looking forward to the next one, Si.
On the Spanish Inquisition.
Okay. Glory.
Just want to let you know before we go this time that all of this material we're covering in these three episodes on the Inquisition with our president, Chris Check, comes from a course he did for the Catholic Answer School of Apologetics. It's called Making Sense of the Inquisition, and I want to recommend it to you. Maybe you've enjoyed these, you want to take the course and get a deeper understanding of the Inquisition. We got a whole bunch of courses over at the Catholic Answer School of Apologetics, from Evidence for Catholic Moral Teaching, Evidence for the Church, Beginning Apologetics. You can start there if you want, Creation Out of Nothing, and they're adding new episodes all the time. SchoolofApologetics.com is where you go to find out all about it. SchoolofApologetics.com. They are not expensive courses, but they are university level courses. There's no deadlines. You don't have to, get any papers in, but it's a university level presentation of explaining and defending the Catholic faith in its various parts. So let me recommend you again, Making Sense of the Inquisition, Chris Check's course, out now at the School of Apologetics. Just go to SchoolofApologetics.com. Don't forget, we love to hear from you. If you have an idea for a future episode, or maybe you want to comment on an episode you've already watched or listened to, focus@catholic.com is our email address, focus@catholic.com. If you're watching on YouTube, just go right down below here and like and subscribe. The more people like and subscribe to it, the better it is for us. It grows it. It really helps to grow the podcast. It also helps us grow the podcast if you're someone who listens on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or any other of the podcast services, if you'll just give us that 5-star review, give us a few comments maybe about why you like the podcast, that really helps to grow the podcast. If you can support us financially, we'll be deeply grateful for that. Just go to givecatholic.com, givecatholic.com. Thanks for joining us. I'm Si Kellett, your host. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Focus.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately, around the moral issues of our time. Visit AveMariaLaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.